This is Pixelated Audio, and you're listening to Solstice, the quest for the staff of Demnos.
Alright, welcome back to Pixelated Audio, a podcast focusing on game audio, its history, and the people behind it. We're your hosts. I'm Brian, and this is Gene.
Hey everybody. We're going to be talking about and listening to one of my favorite games growing up, Solstice, The Quest for the Staff of Demnos, released in June of 1990 for the Nintendo Entertainment System. I love Tim Fallon, so it's always fun to go back to this well.
I don't think there's a human that doesn't love Tim Fallon.
So. That's about the only reason. I don't have any better reason for picking this episode other than, you know, I love this soundtrack. It's short. It's sweet.
I'm sure that everybody listening to this show right now recognizes that tune, or they should, and are excited about what's to come because we love this soundtrack, and the Fallen Brothers are an incredible team, very talented, and Tim on the soundtrack just knocked it out of the park. That opening track was from the title theme of Solstice. Just what an adventure. You know, it starts off simple and kind of dainty and then explodes into just a sound wave of incredible. Like, it's hard to believe that's coming out of the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of us have these sort of formative memories if we like video game music. And for me, this was one of them. Of course, you know, Mega Man 2 was another one. But, you know, you're sitting there in front of the TV and you're like, oh, this is kind of cool. And it's like, what just happened? Track explodes and it just keeps going on and on. And I'm like watching the cutscene, but not really because it's really not important. I'm like, all right, how long is this going to go before it loops? There's like so much craziness going on.
You know, this is one of those unfortunate memories for me because remember the soundtrack, but I don't have an amazing, like, it doesn't. Okay, so backing up a minute here, for some reason, this period of the NES, because it was kind of late, I was mostly playing on like an old TV that my parents got rid of that had problems with the speakers, and it was only mono for the most part, and so the sound quality just wasn't that good, and so I didn't really, I guess, experience the soundtrack until way later on in life, even though I know the game. And so unfortunate, but you know, now we can listen to it in all of its glory. So
You had to be there, man. I was there right when this launched, you know. It was like going to a Rush concert or something. I don't know. I
listened to it. It's just I didn't get the experience because just on the medium I played it on just didn't work. So
yeah, and this is I think this is one of those things that the internet would now say, you know, it's just Pictionary, Tim.
Yeah,
you just exactly. All of the soundtracks just go way over the top in the best possible ways, and I love it.
All right, before we go on, let's get into our next track here. What do we got, Gene?
So we actually got two tracks. We got a very short little intro track that's kind of almost like a long jingle, if you will. It's kind of the intro cutscene after you actually press A or press start or whatever. It shows your girlfriend or whatever, princess getting kidnapped, and then that
Eleanor.
Plays. And then
Princess Eleanor. Eleanor.
Princess Eleanor. And then after that, we're going to jump straight into the main theme that plays as you're walking around the dungeon. This is the thing you're going to hear the absolute most throughout the game. So let's start with the intro.
All right, you just heard the introduction, which is about 30 seconds, followed by the main theme, which plays during the game.
I gotta say, I think a lot of people tend to gravitate towards Tim Fallon's really bombastic, over-the-top tracks, but, you know, you're a kid, you're playing a game a lot, you tend to, you know, map on to what it is you're doing, and I really enjoy this main theme track, especially because it's...
I do, too.
It's very subdued. It's not like on you know, it's not cranked up to 11 the entire time, but it's still doing a lot of the really cool stuff that Tim Fallon is known for, you know, really pushing the hardware.
Well, I think it matches the gameplay a little bit better. I mean, again, not Pictionary, but this kind of goes with the style of the game. The game takes place in a, you know, this kind of fantasy world. And so having this almost kind of, and it's a darker game in general, so having this kind of eerie and almost spooky kind of sound is I think what works for you. And I agree, like, even though, you know, some of these tracks, you know, we hear and we're like, oh my god, this is amazing, what it comes down to too is, you know, the nostalgia of when you were playing the game, right? And this is what you're going to hear. So I totally understand what you're saying.
Even in that middle section where they've got all the sort of twiddly flute voice leading style stuff, I mean, that's just pretty good writing. And
well, yeah,
you don't tend to see that a lot on the NES. And of course, it's a fantasy game. It's a sort of a medieval fantasy, so it makes sense. It's very appropriate. You know, it's a dungeon. You're walking around a lot. It has to be more subdued, otherwise it would just get very exhausting. But it's still, I think, a pretty cool piece of music. And some of that stuff with the periodic noise that's happening is really cool. It's just like, really rarely do I hear that used in that way, in so many different ways too. It's like three or four different times throughout the track uses it for one thing or another, which is kind of cool.
So tell us about this little known composer.
Ah, man, Tim Fallon. I mean, I feel like we talk around him all the time, and I think I say this every time. We've had the one show, which was on Spider-Man and the X-Men, Arcade's Revenge. Not a great game, but it's just chock full of Tim Fallon's aggressively obnoxious prog influences, just like this game. This is an earlier game, but you still see a lot of that prog stuff. He's really well known for his work in the 80s and 90s, especially. He started on the ZX Spectrum, worked pretty consistently all the way up to the PS2, even into the PSP. More recently, he's worked as a game designer and developer. He worked on Contradiction, Spot the Liar. He was very heavily involved in that game. I think they're working on a sequel, but I think a lot of people
they've been working on a sequel for that for like 8 years, man. I did play that game all the way through, and it was actually really fun. I loved the characters in that.
It's still on my list of games to play, but I'm just going to list off some of the probably the games that he's most well known for, because we'd be here all day if I listed them all. But going all the way back, Agent X on the ZX Spectrum, Bionic Commando on the Spectrum and the C64, Ghouls and Ghosts, most of the 8-bit versions of that, Pictionary and Silver Surfer, those are infamous NES games which should not have music as good as they are, Plock on the Super Nintendo, Equinox on the Super Nintendo, which is technically the sequel to this game. A little bit more of a symphonic orchestral soundtrack to that one. It's still pretty good, but it's definitely quite a bit of a different feel. Echo the Dolphin on Dreamcast and Starsky and Hutch on the Xbox and PS2, with a lot of other games in between those ones as well.
Yeah, a lot of the soundtracks that he's done, and this is pretty, you know, well understood at this point, aren't exactly the top brass, if you will, but the music is incredible. So if you haven't, you know, I wouldn't recommend going and playing Silver Surfer, but like if you, you know, listen to the soundtrack, you'll be pleasantly surprised. And same goes for the other ones. I think we did have a track from Echo the Dolphin, like what, like 6 years ago or something. I think Chase actually played it on an expansion pack or something. Yeah.
Way back, like episode 20 or something. I was looking it up earlier. It's very, very early.
Let's get into some more music, unless you know, we haven't talked about the game at all. It's fantasy, but I mean,
yeah,
what else can you do in Solstice?
It's a pretty simple game to explain. I'm going to read the story very quick. So you control Shadax the Wizard on his quest to save Princess Eleanor from the evil Morbius the Malevolent, who looks a lot like the Wicked Witch of the West in Wizard of Oz. Shadax discovers an ancient weapon called the Staff of Demnos, which has the power to destroy Morbius, which is hidden in, I'm not going to read it with the accents, I'm just going to read it in English, Castle Rock. There's like an umlaut and, you know, little weird things. And then he travels to Castle Rock to find the pieces of the staff in order to defeat Morbius and save the princess. It's an isometric puzzle platformer sort of game. It was a very, very popular style of game during the 8-bit computer era, especially in the UK. I think Rareware, actually, one of their earliest games was like this. It was just unusually common and popular just because of memory limitations. You know, you just have like one screen, your character jumps around, gives you that depth perception. In this game, it's pretty much the same sort of thing. You can jump around, avoiding enemies, dodging spikes and things like that. What makes this game a little bit different is there's some limited use potions that'll give you some special abilities, like I think one of them stops time or like stops enemies from moving for a little bit. There's an invincibility potion. I can't remember what the other two did. I think one of them maybe made you, maybe you got a courtesy hit or something. I could probably look it up, but I don't really care that much. But, you know, it's a hard game. And, you know, definitely most of my experience in this game was punctuated by the sound of my character dying, which I'm going to splice in right here, and hearing the game over music, which we're going to play right after this.
I have... Okay, the game actually had pretty rave reviews for the time, especially because
there was some... It's a good game. It's just hard.
It is. It was just a really nice kind of dungeon crawler in a sense. I mean, you're going through this castle. There's different rooms to explore. There's like different booby traps and obstacles to get past. And you have to kind of use your wit to get around with different problem solving. And, you know, then there's also some action to it too. So it did have a lot of these really kind of cool elements thrown in. It didn't master anything, but it just was an entirely, I think, solid package.
Oh yeah. I mean, it was very different from a lot of the other games that I was playing. You know, as a kid, you don't really recognize the, oh, well, right, this comes from Europe and they're steeped in this sort of tradition, because, you know, it was not like a Mega Man or it's not like a Final Fantasy. It was a very different sort of feel to it. And yeah, I mean, there's some tricky jumping and platforming in this game. I mean, you could argue that it's a bad game because it's really hard and you die a lot, but honestly, it controls pretty well. It's fairly predictable, you know, like once you kind of get the hang of it and sort of master sort of these tricksy like box jumps where you'll like grab an item and then drop it in the air and then jump off of the box, you sort of get almost like sequence breaking kind of in a way. Like you start to learn how to avoid a really complicated room or dodge a very complex like floating platform or something. So, you know, you can speed runs of this game or probably could be finished in like 15-20 minutes these days, but at the time it was a lot of fun to kind of figure these things out.
I was going to say, you know, the game itself, it's like, if it wasn't hard, there, it's not that long of a game.
No.
You know what I mean? I did watch like a playthrough or a long play of it like years back. And I remember it was not that intense. You know, it wasn't that drawn out. It kind of gets to the point and you do what you need to do. And if you can master the techniques, you can get through it pretty quick. So,
yeah, I mean, the hardest part is first figuring out where all of the six pieces of the staff are and then doing it all in one playthrough. Luckily,
right,
you can pick up some continues. There's no like, once you get a game over, if you've run out of continues, you have to start the entire game over. But it's sort of like figuring out where in the castle they are, either mapping it, or I think this game actually did a pretty good job of color coding, so you have a decent idea of where you are, and then just executing on it. There's literally not even a boss. Once you have all six of the staff pieces, you just walk in and then the ending cutscene plays. So it's not like a, you know, really tough, you know, action-y boss, thankfully. The game's hard enough.
Game's hard enough. You got it there, you're fine. Let's get into the game over track, and we're going to follow that with the credit or continue track. So let's take a listen.
Those were the very short Game Over and Credit Continue tracks from the game Solstice. And as I said, I tended to hear these quite a lot since I think you only have three or four lives, and you can pick up one-ups and things like that. But yeah, it doesn't make the game too much easier.
I love both these. Yeah, I know they're short, but I love, you know, like that first one. It just, you know, I just picture like Tim, he's like, what am I going to write for this? And he like sits outside on this big rock with like a flute. And he's just like, this is the jam. This is the game over.
Yeah. I mean, they're suitably somber tunes. And there's a bit of tiny bit of hope there in that continue track. And I just, you know, I think consistently this game doesn't really showcase it as well as some of his later games, but he really knows how to use the NES bass channel, that, you know, square wave, very, you know, or that triangle wave. It's just like very warm, but it also a little bit imposing. I just, not every composer really, you know, mastered that technique.
Well, I wouldn't even say mastered. I would just say it's different. Right.
Yeah,
like he took the sound hardware and he did his own thing with it. And he didn't sound like he really tried to emulate or mimic any other composer. He's just like, you know, no, I'm just going to do my own thing. And it worked out well for him. Right. So you do have some notes here. I wanted to bring this up before we kind of close the show out about the cover art. You mentioned it before, but you have a bunch of notes here. So I kind of want you to... you to read this before I forget.
The thing, funny enough, outside of the music, and this is not something that tends to be something that sticks in my mind, but even now, every once in a while, just the picture of the cover art will just pop into my mind. I'm like, oh man, it's such badass cover art. I love this. Solstice is one of those games where if you saw it on a shelf in a video store, or honestly, if you saw this as like on the poster for like a, or like an album cover or something, like, oh, I bet this is like either amazing or just like terrible. Like there's no way, you know, it's just like so over the top. So this cover I'm just going to try to picture it. You can look at the cover art on the actual episode, but it's this ripped blonde wizard dude, no shirt on. He's got his arms wide open in like a T pose. He's got a potion in one hand, the staff in the other. There's waves crashing in the foreground. Castle Rock, you know, the dungeon castle that you're crawling or whatever that you're walking around in, along the cliffside, waves crashing, full moon up above. It's like, damn, it's so good. I know that obviously we've moved along a lot since then, but I wish we still had illustrators who were making this kind of art for video games because it's just so cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's really awesome.
It's iconic, I gotta say, man,
like, the abs on this guy alone are... nobody's messing with this wizard.
And there's a story behind that. Yeah, because, like, one of the reasons why I wanted to do the show is because I just was like, I got curious one day. I went down a, you know, Google rabbit hole. I'm like, who did the art for this game? So I found the credits. And I found the illustrator. His name is Michael Winterbauer. He's worked on a ton of game covers, key art, manuals, a lot of fantasy and sci-fi stuff. He's worked on magazines, movies, books, and games. But his game work is probably the stuff that's most well-known. Again, I'm not going to list everything. I'm just going to list some of the key things. But he worked on some of the Might and Magic games, particularly the Zine games. So there's a couple of... I'm not going to mentally show it, but if you look up, you know, Clouds of Zine, World of Zine, you'll see some of his art. Power Blade for the NES, that's technically him as the reference photo of like the Duke Nukem guy with the goggles or the glasses. Wolf Child for Sega CD, to tie it back into something that we love here on the show. And even Wing Commander on the SNES. We just talked to George Sanger, so that's a nice little tie-in. It's really interesting, though. I think the reason why I wanted to bring this up is he's actually gone back and documented a lot of his work. He put together this really high-quality, like, record of all of the work that he's done in sort of an ebook. It's like 100 something pages. He's got illustrations, he's got redone photos that he's done. So some of these old artworks that he's done, he's like repainted in recent years. And he often used himself for reference photography. So when you see these people that are like muscular dudes just like pointing their sword, he would literally just do that pose with like a stick or something and have somebody take a photo of him, you know, back in the 80s, and then he would use that as reference photography, except for Solstice. And I'm going to read this quote from the book because I thought it was kind of funny. It's, "This was one of the few jobs I didn't pose for because I felt I needed a true bodybuilder who had a superhero physique." But what's funnier is the way he found his his reference model was he just happened to be in like a grocery store in Pasadena in like the late 80s, 89. And he just saw this bodybuilder dude, you know, SoCal, Venice Beach, Muscle Beach, whatever. He's like, can I get you to work with me on this? I need a guy of your physique to do some reference photography. So he literally got some random guy off the street, essentially. And there's a photo of him in this ebook. And yeah, that dude looks super ripped. So, you know, is that's where he got it.
Awesome. Awesome. So today we covered Solstice, the quest for the Staff of Demnos on the NES, composed by Tim Fallon. If you want to know more about the show, you can check us out online at pixelatedaudio.com for the show notes and the track list. We're also on Discord, so join in and have fun.
Yeah, we're going to throw some video game cover art into the mix. I wanted to do a quick shout out for another cover artist that's pretty well known, but Tom Dubois, who did a lot of the Konami stuff. We don't talk about that stuff nearly enough, but yeah, man, I miss those classic 80s, 90s box arts.
Yeah, me too. me too. Not enough of that these days. But anyways, if you're new to the podcast, make sure you check out some of our past episodes. This was a short one, and we have a few more short ones to go. We have episode 176, which we did Wolfchild, 175, Gremlin Graphics with Neil Biggin, and 167, Spider-Man and the X-Men in Arcade's Revenge. Another classic by Mr. Fallon.
Put a little bit more of a shine on those. We don't talk about them nearly enough, or at least I've been on a bit of a kick lately.
Nice. We have one track taking out the show. This is the ending track from Solstice. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you back soon for the next episode. Thank you.